Okay, here we are, doing 10 things right up to the last moment, and then I stretch it another couple moments after that. We have a lot to talk about in this next hour. We're going to bring you again more information for you to process and do with as you will. That's the whole impetus behind journalism, it's supposed to be. And what we're reporting on here is one horrific topic, and that is the topic of the biological weapon that has been unleashed on humankind on this planet. And if you remember the initials ELE, extinction level event, this is potentially exactly that. We have covered this from A to Z, but believe me, we have left out a lot of letters in between A and Z because it's too ugly. It's too diabolical. It's unbelievably diverse, perverted in its attack on people. There are ways that this can take you down that we haven't really had time to get into. And I'm not sure if it's we're going to get there. This, whoever put this together, and I personally, I'm not speaking for my partner, I think there's a potential of off-planet intelligence involved. It's too evil. It's too ugly. Yes, I know we have the science and we can probably do it. I just, every week seems to go by and there's another revelation. Oh my God, it could do this. Oh my God, it could do that. And it is doing that. We still are looking and hoping to find even one honest-to-God person who has been seriously vax-injured, who has returned to a state of full and vibrant health. We haven't seen that yet. Hopefully we will. But I'm not holding my breath personally. And if you remember Dr. Chetty, South African, this is going back almost 3 years now. He said this particular spike protein, this be called a protein, this protein is the most deadly thing mankind has ever created. And he was right. And there's a whole bunch more than just that. If it were just the spike, it would be horrific enough. But we've got the other aspects of it, and aspects we don't yet even understand. That big protein that Erica found early on, that's actually larger than the spike, we don't know what that does. To this day, we don't know. There are other things that we don't know. And then there are other things within this that cause a cascade of events within the body, beyond destroying its immunological competence, which will lead to turbo cancer death, right? You've got prion death of the brain. You've got prions all over the place. And everywhere you go is the spike protein. Wherever the blood goes is the spike. And wherever the spike goes, eventually are going to be misfolded proteins. The body will become a reservoir of misfolded proteins to some degree or another. I'm not able to give you the definitive statement on that, but we know it is creating death and anti-life results wherever it goes. All right, that's enough. You there, partner?
I'm here. You did very well. You really got a very good comprehensive view of it.
Well, I'm disgusted. I'm angry. I'm outraged. I'm repulsed. I'm revolted. I'm humiliated. They did it.
Well, I think so few people really appreciate the full extent of how bad this is.
No, they don't. They don't know. And it's not a lot of fun to be in the position of having to tell people this, but we're here because the truth is the last thing we really have. They haven't taken that completely away yet. Oh, they've corrupted it and perverted it by programming young minds to grow up in a world of non-reality. Most of these younger people, I'm talking about 40 and under, who aren't listening to this program or who really don't understand the dangers of the alt news world, they don't live in reality. They live in a virtual reality created for them by the controllers who have designed and in a brilliant fashion come up with the utterly devastatingly addictive cell phone social media world. These people don't have a chance, especially children.
No,
parents who buy their 6 and 8 year old, all of it, every bit of it, every step of the way by design. They didn't blunder into anything. That's why I think there's more to it. And I once asked someone, if you go to the top of the ladder of world control, and this person was in a position to know, and I said, you know, if you go to the very top and you see the global elite and so forth, I said, it doesn't stop there, does it? It keeps going. It goes higher. And all I got for an answer was, yes. So I think we all are, all of you are to the point now where when you hear and see reports of unidentified flying objects, you know that some of them are ours, some small percentage. Most of them are our visitors who aren't really visitors. I think they've lived here perhaps since before we were here. Who the hell knows? To rule anything out is to be a fool. You don't know. You have to leave the door open. At least you should. All right, we have a number of things to do here. Anything you want to add before we start on our little journey? This is going to be interesting.
No, let's get to it.
All right, the first thing I'd like to do is for all of you people out there who are listening who have recently moved to Florida because you thought Florida was the promised land because it had a Republican governor. And boy, he would never do any of these crazy things, right? No chance. Well, I've got news for you. You have stepped into the belly of the beast, whether it be New York or Florida. It doesn't matter. DeSantis, I think, as you know now, most of you, is a servant of Israel, of Zion. He's the picture of him at the Wailing Wall is something you really can't forget. He took a piece of legislation that was passed in Florida to Israel to sign it as a gesture of solidarity, oh, excuse me, submission to Zionist Israel. He's
incredible.
A dupe. All right, here you go. Let me just read this. Full-scale medical martial law is coming to America in 2024. It has been nearly 3 years since Operation Warp Speed delivered the Wuhan coronavirus vaccines, in quotes, to the world, and more people than perhaps ever before are sicker now than they have ever been. As the situation worsens, the government is readying to unleash full-scale medical martial law in America, likely at some point next year. Sources are reporting that upwards of 50% of people who got jabbed for COVID were sickened by the shots, or are still sick, with no end in sight, or, and I'll add this, are getting worse with no end in sight. 8 out of 10 jab recipients, especially including those who got at least one booster in addition to the primary series, are suffering complications that could end up disabling them or killing them. According to Dr. Peter McCullough, every single person who got even just one COVID injection is now experiencing some kind of problem or series of problems related to their heart, whether they realize it or not. Those who do realize it often discovered it by surprise when they suffered an unexpected cardiac arrest or inflammatory reaction like myocarditis, pericarditis, endocarditis, etc. All right, so there you go. Now, we know what happened in New York, right? Governor Hochul has given the power to all doctors and health department officials to pick up anyone at any home or residence in the state who is deemed a problem for refusing the vaccine, for one. There are a whole bunch of them, and that's New York. New York is gone. Stay the hell out of New York. They can pick these people up and put them in concentration camps and they'll never be seen again. Or they'll be held down and injected with the death weapon in the camps. New York is said to have its quarantine camps ready and waiting for the political green light to start loading up the boxcars and delivering prisoners to their bunks. Other states are reportedly doing the same thing. And here we go. Here's the punchline. Believe it or not, Florida, under Governor Ron Zion DeSantis, is another state where residents face the same forced quarantine situation that New Yorkers now do under Governor Kathy Hochul. DeSantis is a Republican, and Hochul is a Democrat, demonstrating once again that tyranny is a bipartisan effort in America. Hochul's forced quarantine measures are at least clearly outlined as such, but DeSantis is hiding behind a so-called no-vax bill that, upon closer investigation, is actually a forced vax bill in disguise. As stated directly in DeSantis' no-vax bill, the government of Florida can now issue an order for an individual, any individual in the state, quote, to be examined, tested, vaccinated, treated, isolated, or quarantined for communicable diseases that have significant morbidity or mortality and present a severe danger to public health. Individuals who are unable or unwilling to be examined, tested, vaccinated, or treated for reasons of health, religion, or conscience may be subjected to isolation or quarantine in the wonderful state of Florida. The DeSantis no-vax bill goes on to state that if an individual in Florida is deemed to be a, quote, danger to the public health, end quote, he or she can be apprehended by the state health officer and forced into isolation or quarantine, just like the New York bill. Got it?
Surprise.
Uniparty. We have no, don't even play with those stupid labels, Democrat and Republican. They're all whores. They're servants of Satan, all of them.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. So there we go with that. Now, tell us about the good humor man, the ice cream salesman, Dr. Philip McMillan, and we'll get into that. What do we got?
Well, he's another high-profile doc that is addressing this white lung syndrome that's becoming, it's cropping up all over the globe. And he's offering his opinion on it. He believes that this is the result of the SARS-CoV-2 virus still circulating, and the fact that really nobody has immunity to it at this point. With this leaky vaccine that's really not a vaccine, they really only enabled the virus to further spread and become endemic, but not really attenuate very much. In other words, not become a common cold or just a nuisance as as should have been the case if it was a legitimate vaccine or an effort to immunize the population. In fact, the opposite has happened. So now people are infected not only with the SARS virus or perhaps just the spike because it lands in the lungs and irritates the lungs just like asbestos. They've got a chronic inflammation in the lungs which predisposes them to opportunistic infections, which this mycoplasma strain of bacteria was considered to be. We would get surges of it every few years, and it would come and go in cycles and not be too much of a nuisance. And if it was, there would be some antibiotics that could knock it down. But in this case, the antibiotics are not working, and this bacteria is just running rampant now. And these cases are literally spiking off the chart.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Is this a new bacteria that kind of came out of the firmament, or is it a recycled old one that is now just invading almost any human physiology that no longer has a viable immune system? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, this is just a nuisance bacteria. It was commonly known as walking pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was more of a problem in children. With adults, it would, you know, be a case of a chronic cough for a while, but it wouldn't debilitate you.
Speaking
but
of
now
chronic
it's
coughing,
becoming a problem.
Yeah. Speaking of chronic coughing, I was out and on the periphery of humans today, and I heard 3 or 4 people with that COVID cough. No question.
Oh, it's all over the place here.
Don't think of it as white lung. It's different. It's a COVID cough, and it may be clotting in the lungs. It may be a number of things. This thing is so damn diverse. It's just unbelievable. All right, here's The kindly, I just, he reminds me of a good humor salesman. You remember those ice cream trucks that used to come around in the summer? He just reminds me of a guy selling ice cream to kids. He's a nice guy. All right. Here we go. This is Dr. Philip MacMillan on white lung.
Hi, good evening to everyone. Thank you very much for joining me. I'm Dr. Philip MacMillan. I've been focused on the COVID-19 pandemic since early 2020. I predicted that this was a viral-mediated autoimmune disease. I've continued to raise awareness of that because I thought at the time that it was such an important piece of information because it had relevance not just to how we treated disease in the first phase of the pandemic, but also how we can anticipate what can occur when we have done a very broad vaccination campaign across the world. Science is pretty straightforward in that oftentimes if you can understand the science, you can predict what's likely to happen next. And so sadly, because of my autoimmune paradigm, I've been able to largely predict almost everything that has happened so far in the pandemic. Sadly, I am predicting as well what is happening about white lung syndrome. This is not for the faint-hearted, because what I'm going to say after this is not good. Now, truthfully, this is my opinion. But as I explained to you before, I've been sharing my opinion now for 3.5 years, and largely it has been correct. So this part is really, really significant. And in truth, I am more worried now than I was at the beginning of the pandemic, and I was worried then. There's a presentation that I've got prepared that I haven't done as yet, and this is about the lessons from 1918. Pandemic history repeating itself. Now, in that presentation, I'll explain what I think were the mistakes that were made at that time. But very importantly, that pandemic history has a very frightening lesson, and it's about numbers. In the first wave of that pandemic in 1918, there were 2 million who died. In the second wave, it was between 50 to 100 million who died. So that brings us stark contrast into if we've made a similar mistake with this pandemic, we can expect numbers, not like 6.5 million, but over 100 million. And this is what I had predicted as well. This was over a year ago, a tsunami of deaths. Now, as I said, this is not for the faint-hearted. This is my opinion. This is not from any of your trusted agencies. This is just me looking at the science and saying, this is concerning. This is serious. We need to figure this out quickly and try and mitigate. That's the important word that I use here, mitigate. Because in truth, in my heart of hearts, I am not looking to stop deaths because I don't think that's possible with what the science is showing. I am hoping to mitigate it. If we can reduce it by 10 or 15%, that's millions, tens of millions of people who could be saved. But it requires serious acknowledgement, serious work by the whole scientific community, not just by me. This is pretty significant. So let's start with some basic stuff. This is in the Daily Mail, and some people don't like the Daily Mail in the UK, but I found the story here, and it's talking about Denmark, the surge in cases in Denmark, white lung syndrome pneumonia sparking fears in China, after Netherlands as well warned of alarming spike in cases. So the critical thing that you have to note with this is that this is happening globally. So it's not about a new virus that's causing this. It's not that there is some dangerous variant that is driving this white lung syndrome. It's not that. But it's important to note that it is occurring in multiple places at the same time. And what they're finding out is that a lot of it is being driven by Mycoplasma pneumonia, which is a lung infection. And this is the image of the numbers that they are seeing in Denmark. And you can see the rise. This is weeks at the bottom. And you can see this rapid rise in cases over the past 4 to 5 weeks. So this is pretty significant in Denmark as well. So they are looking at declaring a health emergency with regards to what is happening. The problem is that based on the science, this trend is not going to stop. Okay? That's the bit that I think is quite serious. Now, when I made this presentation just a few days ago, I was explaining about the China's mystery wave of childhood pneumonia. I was looking at mycoplasma, and I was looking specifically at how mycoplasma would interact with SARS-CoV-2 to make it the likely predisposing infection in the a co-infection almost with SARS-CoV-2 and mycoplasma. But the bigger question is, why would mycoplasma be infecting so many people at the same time? There must be something else going on, because it's not just about the viral infection. It is, but it isn't. This is now where it gets pretty serious. And again, everything is predicted. And so I'm going to show you again, this is me predicting this or asking this question. And this was in October 2022. And it was a simple question. Why didn't they develop a vaccine against SARS-CoV? This is the virus in 2003 that impacted Asia. So what was different this time, so to speak? And in effect, when they looked at the study, which I'll come to, they highlighted that all of the vaccine candidates they used at that time triggered a hypersensitivity immune pathology in the lungs. This is the bit that is completely predictable from a scientific point of view. It happened before. Why would it not happen again? So here's the bit that I think people are confused about. And if we had a situation where the vaccine was sterilizing, that means that it blocked infection completely. So it did have an impact on infection, but just not long enough. And in some cases, some would argue that it increased the risk of infection for people who had been vaccinated. Whichever way you take it, it was unable to block transmission. Now, our problem became that once that occurred, we were supposed to face this only once. So meaning that everybody gets exposed, either they develop hybrid immunity or natural immunity, and then the pandemic is over. Nobody took into consideration that we wouldn't achieve herd immunity. Now that is our problem, because that then takes us back to the study, and the study was doing exactly the question that we are facing now. It's called a challenge study. And so essentially what they did, and so this is the paper here. This was, as I said, this was from 2012. Immunization with SARS coronavirus vaccines leads to pulmonary immunopathology on challenge with the SARS virus. On challenge is the critical word. So what they did, and you can see here, is that they designed four vaccine candidates for humans with or without alum adjuvant. And they used a mouse model of SARS, and they gave this vaccine to a number of animals, including a whole virus vaccine and a DNA produced S protein. Then they found that when they did that, they got a good immune response. That's great. So of course, they then go on to do the next step. And so the next step is that on day 0 and 28, they sacrificed for serum antibody measures or challenged with live virus on day 56. So follow this. This is the important piece here. They then took a section of them, of these animals, and they challenged them, challenged with live virus on day 56. On day 58, the challenged mice were sacrificed and the lungs were obtained for virus and histopathology. So that's essentially what they did in 2012. That's good science. That's when you are looking not just for the initial response, but you are looking for the outcomes beyond the initial response. Because getting a good immune response is fine. But the question is, what happens if there is further exposure to the virus? And that's the bit that we needed to take into consideration. Now, some people said it would be endemic and it would be just like a cold. That's low-grade infection throughout the population. But it seems to be very significant circulation of SARS-CoV-2 at this stage of the pandemic. And this is what you would therefore call a challenge study.
Okay, go ahead and let's kind of reformulate that and make the high points here. What did he just tell us?
We are now seeing what was completely predictable based on the trials of vaccines they did for the first SARS coronavirus. And every time they tried to develop a vaccine, they would, upon challenge, meaning after the animals were vaccinated and then at a later date were challenged with the disease, even though they had generated antibodies, which looked good. It was an immune response, right? Well, when they encountered the wild-type virus, they had, a lung pathology. The lungs were infected and destroyed. I mean, it was a hypersensitivity response, which is, you know, another way of saying antibody-dependent enhancement. So, and the same thing has now happened, which, I don't know why wouldn't it have happened. you know, 18 years of coronavirus research, and they were never, ever able to come up with a successful vaccine.
Not
or
once.
One that didn't behave this way.
No, no.
Because really, no. It's not the antibody response that's protective. It's the T-cell response.
Exactly. All right, let's...
Because a virus is an intracellular pathogen. So you have to have T cells to be able to recognize cells that have become infected and to rout them out.
Right.
And all the antibodies do in these cases is just enable the virus to come in and circulate and get into places that it wouldn't normally go. And you have a release of many more inflammatory cytokines, and it's basically the cytokine storm that can be lethal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, let's finish up with our little segment here. We got about another 4 minutes or so. Here we go.
We are now exposing the whole population to virus after a significant percentage has been vaccinated and another percentage has had natural immunity. This is now where we come back to the paper. And the link is in the description if you want to read it for yourself. But I'll highlight here the conclusion. So in conclusion, all of the SARS-CoV vaccines induced antibody and protection against infection with SARS-CoV. However, challenge of mice given any of the vaccines, any of the four vaccines, led to the occurrence of Th2-type immune pathology, suggesting hypersensitivity to the SARS-CoV components was induced. This was critical, and what they said, caution in proceeding to application of a SARS-CoV-2 vaccine in humans is indicated. That was the SARS, 2012. And my suspicion is that they hoped this wouldn't happen, which is why mRNA was pushed, because they knew that this was a potential possibility. And I think if you look in the side effect profiles, it is something that is highlighted. They knew it was a possibility, but the hope probably, I am just assuming, the hope was probably that this would not occur. Our problem now is that we don't have herd immunity across the population. The virus is still continuing to circulate. And what we would call this is an example of hypersensitivity pneumonitis, okay? Or extrinsic alveolar, extrinsic, I'll get the name, the correct terminology for it, but extrinsic allergic alveolitis, okay? The kind of disease pattern that was is what we call bird fancier's lung. So that's what would happen in somebody who liked birds, collected birds. They then became sensitive to the droppings from the birds, and they're inhaling it all the time, and they end up with a lung immune pathology because of it. And another example of it is what they call farmer's lung, where because they're dealing with hay all the time, they then become sensitized to the hay. And as they continue to be exposed to this hay, they will then have inflammation in their lungs. So that's an example of hypersensitivity pneumonitis. A similar thing can happen even with air conditioners, what they call humidifier lung. But the point is that you have a trigger, and if you're continually exposed to the trigger, you can then end up with an inflammatory process, an allergic inflammatory process in the lungs. This is a problem.
Have you guys seen these bare-skin hoodie ads?
No, we haven't seen those ads. All right. He's making it real clear. This mycoplasma pneumonia, white lung disease, is actually on the list of Pfizer's vaccine side effects that they were forced to reveal to the public. Pfizer knew that mycoplasma would have a field day after inoculation with this bioweapon. They knew. Was a side effect.
Well, evidently it did turn up in the clinical trials as a side effect.
That's right.
With how many other? 1,291 other things?
This is ludicrous. I don't even know how many. Just crazy. So, all right. There's a little bit more left here. Do we want to play the rest of this? I went a little far on the first part, but accidentally.
Yeah, I don't think you have to. I mean, you know, the point is that lot of people now are in trouble because of this inflammation, this chronic inflammation that's happening in the lungs, making it susceptible to opportunistic secondary infections with bacteria and whatnot. If this continues, you're looking at pulmonary fibrosis. And I'm already observing a lot of comments with people reporting issues with their lungs, even the unvaxxed now, which really is no surprise because the virus is still circulating, so there's still people getting infected that way, breathing it in and having their right. lungs infected. But also the spike protein on its own, breathing that in, can do the same thing.
It's not getting any better out there. What we're beginning to see is more and more evidence of immune failure in people. This mycoplasma is apparently one of the bigger issues that we've seen, that it's not directly related to the injection. It's an after effect, so
right.
to speak. And it's not getting any better, friends. I guess that's that's the big point. Okay, on to the next item in our basket here.
We've got
Ebola.
A couple.
Okay, go ahead.
Before we move on to that, there was an example here of somebody, actually a couple of people complaining about these lung issues that
Good.
We should probably read. And this pertains to the dogs, this respiratory illness happening in dogs now that is on occasion fatal. They haven't identified what it is. So I would think that, you know, these dogs are being exposed to the spike protein.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not this coronavirus can infect dogs, who knows? Dogs do carry their own complement of coronaviruses. And you know, it's possible they're mutating now and acquiring some of the attributes of this SARS-CoV-2 virus.
Mm-hmm.
We won't know until somebody does some studies, but
yeah, you want to do
okay,
that. We got two on December 1st. That's what you're talking about, shedding
yes.
lung issues, one and two.
Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead, do those. They're important.
Someone says the latest dogs getting pneumonia, kids getting pneumonia. My hubby spent a long car ride with someone who was sick last fall, jabbed coworker. He did not get a sore throat, just very bad lungs. My current belief is that the spike is being shared via respiration to kids and dogs, their pets, and sometimes each other. The spike is the gift that keeps on giving.
Sickeningly
true. And someone says, yeah, it is true. Can you explain very bad lungs? My husband had to go into a jabbed person's home a week ago. He said he was inside for maybe 3 minutes. He came home, and my nostrils and throat burned immediately. He took a detox bath straight away, and we laundered his clothing, but we both feel like our sinuses and lungs are now scorched, even now, a week later.
Mm.
All right, so people had plenty of advice, and I want to put a warning out of what maybe not to do in this situation. Someone says, put colloidal silver in a nasal spray bottle and use 2 to 3 times a day. Nebulize equal parts, 3% food-grade hydrogen peroxide, and normal saline twice a day. Dr. Adriana Love says she thinks the shedding is anthrax. Okay.
That's Ariana, but whatever. Same
yeah,
one.
She
thinks it's anthrax. Let's discount that right now.
No, it's not anthrax.
Right.
But this advice, you be very, very careful. If you have a feeling of scorched lungs, like a week after whatever this exposure was, doing an oxidative therapy, and I would include silver in there because silver generates free radicals, or hydrogen peroxide could be very damaging. What you have here is a situation where the lungs have been oxidized. They've been damaged through oxidation, and putting more substances that are going to generate more oxidative stress on the lungs could be catastrophic. You know, you don't want to end up with acute lung injury. So my advice would be don't do that if you were going to inhale anything. I would only consider molecular hydrogen, inhalation molecular hydrogen, because that's very, very healing.
Where are people going to get that? They're going to want to know where to get molecular hydrogen.
Well, you have to have a hydrogen generator, and mm-hmm. there are, well, many on the market. They're not cheap, but if you You know, you want to invest in your health. This is, you know, it's a good thing to have. It's probably the most potent antioxidant on the planet because it's a gas. Now, you don't inhale it at such a concentration that you could, you know, explode your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
But it is used therapeutically in Japan, in hospitals, for people with this type of, you know, lung injury. That's the only thing I would consider inhaling for somebody with scorched lungs. And really what it's a sign of is that you've depleted your glutathione in that organ. So they're going to be very, very susceptible to damage if you don't correct that. And you've got to get away from the irritant first and foremost.
Right. All right, good counsel. We never tell people what to do. We just suggest things that they might consider doing and why we suggest them. And there's your answer there. Okay, very good. You can listen to these programs. They're always up on the homepage. Listen again and again. Pass them around. Please do. All right, Denver Health administers first shots of Ebola vaccine. Yes, there's an approved, which means less and less all the time, an Ebola vaccine that is now being injected into human beings. It happened. In a milestone moment in the Mile High City on November 27th, Denver Health administered the first live Ebola vax for preventative measures to some patients. All right. In 2015, HHS designated Denver Health as one of the 13 regional emerging special pathogens treatment centers in the U.S., blah, blah, blah. The vaccine called ERVEBO, Ervebo, I would guess, was
Ervebo.
First approved. Ervebo, is that it? I like Ervebo better. All right. Was first approved by the FDA back in 2019. All right, this is not an mRNA vaccine.
No.
Go ahead and explain.
This is, it is a live virus. What they've done is taken something called VSV, the vesicular stomatitis virus, which is a virus that normally infects livestock, but it can infect people. It causes, you know, sores or lesions in the mouth. And they've created kind of a chimera with one of the genes of the Ebola virus. So they inject this live VSV into a person and have them produce basically the surface protein, glycoprotein of the Ebola virus, and supposedly that should protect the person from Ebola. Now, I'm trying to find... how long does the protection last? Is it really effective? How safe is it? And it seems like the biggest, they trialed it on 15,000 people. Looks like it was in Africa. And the biggest complaint was arthritis. There were a lot of complaints of arthritis afterwards. And then, of course, the usual that you would expect after you've been injected with a poison, sweating, fever, pain at the injection site. But arthritis seems to be the main side effect from this vaccine. But more alarmingly is it sheds. So even if you didn't get the vaccine, if you are in close contact with somebody who did, you too can become vaccinated. In their own literature, this is Merck's literature, it says vaccine
right in the
virus.
Literature. Now, hold on. This is really important. This is right in the literature, so we can't say we weren't told. It's there. Go ahead.
Vaccine virus RNA, that's the genetic material, has been detected by RT-PCR in blood, saliva, urine, and fluid from skin vesicles, like open lesions, of vaccinated individuals. Transmission of vaccine virus is a theoretical possibility.
All right. So the safety and effectiveness of this new approved live virus vaccine have not been assessed by immuno or in immunocompromised individuals. The effectiveness of Ervebo in immunocompromised individuals may be diminished. Interesting.
What does that mean? Does that mean the virus replicates to lethal levels?
That's right. That's a wild one. So if your immune system is trashed, the effectiveness of this new, believe it or not, Ebola vax is potentially, well, you tell them.
Well, it's unknown.
They don't know. That's what they're saying. They just kind of threw their hands up. The risk of vaccination with Ervebo, a live virus vaccine, in immunocompromised individuals should be weighed against the risk of disease itself due to Zaire Ebola virus. That's the Ebola. Now, we've only had 11 cases of Ebola in the United States in history. 10 of those cases came from Africa. One died, and only one case out of the 11 was generated organically here in the U.S. from an infected person. That's it. So they're rolling out a whole new vaccine for that. All right, well, make of it what you will.
Well, just remember that Ebola is, you know, you need close contact with bodily fluids. It's not aerosolized, but if you have contact with bodily fluids, that's how it's spread.
Well, in a way, if you think about it, they're talking about, you just read it, saliva, urine, fluid, and so forth. That would mean if you were to sneeze or cough, it would come out in an aerosolized form go ahead.
Oh, okay. What I read there pertains to the VSV vaccine containing the Ebola antigen.
Not someone stricken with Ebola. I just wanted to make that clear. We're talking about this particular shot. Yeah.
The VSV virus is spread through aerosols.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this vaccine could be shed very, you know, casually. You wouldn't have to have, you know, direct contact with bodily fluids. It could be spread through aerosols.
Like the spike, you give your neighbors a ride in the car for 15 minutes with the windows rolled nearly up, and you've been sick for a year and a half, or was it longer? I don't know how long Lori's been sick.
Oh, 2 years, 5 months?
2 years. It's a long time. So you can get tagged with spike and mRNA and whatever else these people are shedding all the time now. It's not good. And you do not want, don't, you need to discard that old saw about how the virus is no problem. You'll get over it in a few days. It's like the flu or whatever. No, you don't want this virus. It's not a good thing. They've now determined that 2 years after getting over it, so to speak, in a week or so or less, you're still having the same damages perpetrated within your physiology. 2 years later.
I think what's happened is the fact that they have deployed this leaky vaccine, which, you know, it can't even qualify as a vaccine if you think about
No.
It's put such selective pressure on the virus to keep mutating that nobody can get ahead of it.
No.
So it keeps changing. Nobody has immunity to it because, before they've gotten over the one they just had, here's another one.
It's incredible. All right,
and
let's
the
jump
damage
to,
it does, you know, it paralyzes, hopefully temporarily, a part of the immune system. I mean, everybody seems to lose some white blood cells, some capability of their white blood cells after they've had this for a period of time. So they're immune suppressed for a fairly long period of time, a couple months sometimes.
At a minimum. This is a minimum.
Yeah.
This is a given.
And in the meantime, you have the reawakening of latent viruses, these herpes viruses, of which there are 8, that further challenge the immune system. And some people just can't get those under control. It's a real mess. And I don't know if anybody knows, what kinds of recombination events are occurring with people that are co-infected with other viruses with this thing.
No one's looking.
I'm sure it's happening.
Oh, yeah. And that makes total sense. Yes. All right. Well, we'll keep watch. We have a couple more topics I'd like to get to. Dr. William Mackus has written about mRNA in pregnancy. Fetuses unborn babies have now been developing turbo cancers, not to mention heart issues. This is Dr. Magus. I'll read a little bit from this. New article, mRNA in pregnancy. Fetuses are developing cancers. These may be fetal turbo cancers. Worse yet, DNA contamination contained within lipid nanoparticles may be crossing the placenta into the fetus and integrating. Remember the DNA contamination in every injection, up to 400 billion pieces, fragments of DNA? Those may be going into the unborn baby and integrating into the baby's DNA. Have you heard recently about fetuses developing cancer in utero? Well, June 16th, 2021, Sadie Shepard got her COVID shot in the second trimester, and her baby developed brain cancer and died at 2 days old. Another one, Anya developed very rapidly a cancerous brain tumor in utero. This is an unborn baby. This is the one we're talking about. Suspected at 20 to 32 weeks. That progressed so rapidly and shifted my organs in such a dangerous way that my cesarean was performed by over 30 doctors, surgeons, and technologists. Technicians. 30. This woman lost her baby at 2 days of age. So anyway, there's much more to this. The idea, she further says, Dr. Mackus says, had baby Anya lived 2 days and died on June 16th, her baby did two days old. We are starting to see these types of horror stories. COVID-19 mRNA vaccinated pregnant women are having babies that develop aggressive cancers while still in utero. These may be turbo cancers, but it is too early to draw conclusions. Nevertheless, this is extremely alarming. I will raise a very serious concern that I believe has not been raised by anyone yet. Liquid nanoparticles, LNPs, cross the placenta. This was known before mRNA jabs were rolled out. When a pregnant woman is vaxxed with an mRNA vaccine, the LNPs in her blood cross the placenta and deliver Pfizer or Moderna mRNA to the unborn baby, which will then produce the toxic spike protein in the unborn baby. All right, I'm going to leave that right there and ask all of you just to think about that carefully. The LNPs are big problems, and nobody's talking much about those at all.
Yeah.
One last note, he says, women who are injected with COVID-19 mRNA vaccines prior to or during pregnancy must be monitored at all times for fetal abnormalities, including and especially cancer. No one is safe. No one is safe. Not the unborn, not the born, not anyone. This is horrific what's been done to the human species.
It sure is. It's mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling.
All right, one other thing we should talk about. More and more pilots are disabled and dying on the job. They're dying. In the U.S. military, the Pentagon data now shows heart failure spiked nearly 1,000% among military pilots. That's just in 2022. And commercial pilots, I don't know. Do you have this over there?
Yeah.
If you do, go ahead, jump in. Let's do a couple of these from the story.
Okay.
It's the Twitter piece. Pilot incapacitation. Mackus.
Yep,
see it?
Got it.
Go ahead.
Okay. American Airlines flight AA-755, Boeing 787 from Charles de Gaulle to Philadelphia. Pilot had a seizure and collapsed November 29, 2023. The pilot had a seizure that stiffened his legs and back, jamming his feet under rudder pedals on short final approach. The captain immediately took over flying duties, and there was no loss of aircraft control. The relief pilot, who was required to be on the flight deck during landing, was able to remove the unconscious pilot from the seat. This is the fourth pilot incapacitation in 2 weeks. Yeah.
There's a whole long list of
them. November 26th.
Mm-hmm.
There was Ryanair flight FR3472 from London Luton, UK, to Russia,
Poland.
One of the pilots became incapacitated. The plane diverted to Krakow, and landed safely. The aircraft was awaited by an ambulance. The pilot received medical assistance. November 20th, Air Transat flight TS-186 from Toronto, Canada, to Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. The pilot became incapacitated and was replaced by a pilot passenger. Good thing he was on board.
Anybody back here fly this plane?
November 16, Air India pilot death. 37-year-old Air India pilot Captain Himanil Kumar had a cardiac arrest at Delhi's Indira Gandhi International Airport during training. October 30th, Manchester, UK to Dalaman, Turkey. First officer became incapacitated. Pilot diverted aircraft to Budapest and landed safely. October 18, Austrian Airlines pilot death. 43-year-old Christian Zimmerebner, Austrian airline pilots and member of the Dorfgastein Mountain Rescue, died suddenly due to serious illness.
Yeah.
September 24, Austrian Airlines.
There's another one.
Stuttgart to Vienna, the captain became incapacitated. The first officer took control.
I mean, this is going on all the time, and you're not hearing about it, all right? It's obviously being covered up, and it's bad for business. But it's not something you should be without in terms of knowledge. You have a right to this. You need to know that if the pilot door opens and somebody says, does anybody have any flight experience, start praying. This is not a joke. I mean, this is damn near what happened in that one flight.
This isn't limited to the pilots. The maintenance crew also. Remember these? We watched a video where there was some comments beneath it, and one of the commenters was a maintenance worker that couldn't believe some of the stuff he was seeing. He said, I won't fly again. No way.
He said that. He said, no,
yeah.
Guy works in maintenance and repair, said, I'm not flying anymore. No, these people are obviously screwing up on the job, putting engines back together, putting them back on the aircraft wing, and something's wrong, and it can happen. There's so many thousands of parts. I don't know. It's nuts. All right. We're running really late. We have to say goodnight to all of you. Thank you for being here. There's a lot more out there. We'll try and catch you up further on Wednesday. Thanks.
Okay.
Great job.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back with another hour for all of you in just a minute.